Awesome to welcome Coach Brett Burchard of Championship Shift and former NBA basketball coach to the Basketball Podcast. Brett is a former professional basketball coach and mindset coach with a career that spans collegiate basketball, the NBA, and the NBA G League. He has coached for more than 15 years, including a decade with the Phoenix Suns organization in a variety of roles, and served as head coach of the Northern Arizona Suns, the Suns G League affiliate, as well as a recent assistant coaching role with the Salt Lake City Stars. His on-court experience laid the foundation for his work off the court, where he now focuses on the mental and leadership side of high performance. Building on that background, Brett is the co-founder of Championship Shift, a mindset training company that works with athletes, coaches, and leaders to help them compete and lead with confidence, resilience, and humility. He's also an accomplished author and co-author with multiple books focused on leadership, mindset, team culture, Catching Confetti, Lead for Impact, and Making Culture Your Edge. Are must-read books for all of us.
Do you know which lineups and player combinations are the most productive? Hoopsalytics has the most comprehensive lineup analysis system available. Coaches can see how each group performs offensively or defensively or excels in special situations. For example, if you need to force a late-game turnover, you can see which group has the best defensive turnover percentage or see which four athletes work best with your star player. And you can do the same team-based analysis for groups of two or three players as well. Hoopsalytics brings the most powerful analytics to teams of all levels. It's easy to use and affordable. It's like AI for basketball coaches. Discover how Hoopsalytics can help you make better data-driven coaching decisions. Visit hoopsalytics.com today to learn more.
Brett, welcome to the Basketball Podcast.
Thanks for having me, Coach.
Awesome to have you here. And you've been up to a few things since last we talked, and coaching with Salt Lake, another book, moving into Championship Shift and focusing on that. Talk to us a little bit about what you've been up to.
Yeah, it's been a fun several years since we've last talked. I learned and grown a lot in my own journey, and excited to bring more to the coaching space. Spent the last two seasons with Salt Lake City Stars, the Utah Jazz minor league affiliate. And then before that was coaching with a college team, Ottawa University in Arizona, not Canada, and had an awesome run with them to the Final Four, and a really fun experience there, and just in finding my joy in coaching again, and really enjoyed that experience and had a lot of success and fun there. And then, yeah, now stepping into Championship full-time, helping coaches navigate the tension between that pressure to win, that desire to impact, and how to build high-performing teams in the current landscape of all that is high school and college and professional athletics. Excited to be doing this work now.
Great to have you in this space. And no matter what I do, no matter how many times I talk about icing the ball screen, people love culture. They love talking about culture. And to be able to make it practical and applicable for people is obviously the gift. And I can't wait to dive into that a little bit. You mentioned the phrasing lead for impact. So let's start with that. What do you mean by lead for impact?
Yeah, I think what you just said is spot on. Like I can geek out with the best of them on different strategies of defense and offensive counters and all the X's and O's of the game. But I think if we're honest with ourselves, most of the coaches, at least the coaches I work with, got into coaching because they wanted to have an impact on someone's life. And whether that's because someone had an impact on their lives and that started it for them, or they wanted to give back because basketball did so much for them. And that's the motivation that got us started in this game in the first place. But what happens with so many coaches, me included, this is a part of my story too, is once we get in it and then we start worrying about the wins and losses, results start piling up, parents, administrators, our peers start mumbling and saying things, we can lose sight of that original vision, of the original reason why we got into coaching in the first place. And we start drifting towards leading for our own validation rather than what we started about with is leading for impact. And it happens to all of us. It happens to the best of it. I have stories in my own career where that pressure just slowly nudges you towards this drift, towards leading for validation. And none of us wake up and say, I want to be an angry, impatient, dreadful coach with bitter relationships. But we see it over and over and over again, how that drift just occurs. Really, the mission behind my work now is how can we help coaches stay on the path of impact? Because I really believe this. A coach has a unique place in a person's life to have an impact, a life-changing impact, than anyone else. Like more than a teacher, more than a guidance counselor, more than a pastor. And I respect all those roles and those positions, but I think there's no higher calling than to be a coach. And if we can have coaches who are leading for impact and making an impact on people's lives, it's going to improve everything around us.
You don't have to convince me of that. And you don't have to comment on this, but anyone who's listening, who's in a position to be able to do this, is why we need to value coaches, teachers more. That's one thing that being an outsider of this country, I cannot believe in America how little we value some of those professions that have the most impact on kids. And if we want to change the world, we need to start with that and get this platform so that more coaches can do it from a full-time basis so they can do a lot of the things that you're talking about. Because I know it, I've been there too, Brett. It takes a lot of effort. It takes a lot of aftercare. It takes a lot of communication. And those things are just as physically draining as running a practice to be able to build individual relationships, to be able to build team culture. So, talk to us a little bit about that. How can coaches maintain their bucket so they can focus on some of these areas outside of practice and within practice?
Yeah, you're spot on. And it does start with us as leaders and in developing ourself and our own mindset and how we're showing up to these practices, to the games, to the high pressure moments and situations. We say this a lot of times, like you've heard it, that a team takes on the personality of the head coach. And that's proven out over and over just anecdotally. And I go farther to say a team is going to adopt the mindset of their head coach. And a lot of the coaches, a lot of teams I worked with, like 90% of the mistakes a team makes under pressure have originated in the coach's mindset, whether they realize it or not. And so the work we can do on ourselves to come in with a clear mind, a fresh perspective, with a centered energy that to lead the team well goes so far. So, everything with the X's and O's, the strategy, the practice preparation, all that is so valuable and important. Without the proper mindset behind those things, then all the work you did with your strategy, with your planning, with your preparation is going to go out the window. So I say this a lot, like it starts at the root level is the mindset. If you group it into three categories, mindset, skill set, tool set, we can give you all the tools you need to do the job. But if you don't have the skills to leverage those tools, you're not going to get the most out of them. And if you don't have the mindset to show up to lead for impact and not for your own validation, the skills you've developed and the tools at your disposal are going to go to waste.
So I know it's individually driven a little bit in terms of this, but what is a proper mindset for a coach?
Yeah, it is that space to show up and lead for impact, not validation. And it starts with us with an awareness of how are your insecurities driving your decisions, your actions, your reactions in high pressure moments. And the key there is in high pressure moments, 97% of the time, most of us operate at a high functioning level where we lead well. But where we zero in on is those 3% of the time when you're under pressure, under stress. How do you show up in those moments? Because that's the moment that's going to leave the lasting impact. People will remember the times where you said hi to them in the hallway, for sure. They will really remember the times that you were under the most stress, under the most pressure. How did you respond? How did you show up? And so that's the key focus there is how are you showing up in those moments of stress and pressure? And that's the moment where our insecurities start driving our actions and reactions and decisions. And so, if we can get to an awareness level of what are those insecurities that are driving us in those moments, now we can show up not to comfort my own insecurities by either powering up, improving, taking more control, or withdrawing, removing ourselves from the moment, not showing up where we need to lead. If we can be aware of those moments so we don't lead for our own validation, but we can calm that inner voice that wants us to prove and hide and then show up and impact and give what the team needs.
So I enjoy talking about this, and just I'm going to reflect back something you sent to me. A coach starts leading for validation more than impact. It basically means things like this: caring turns to bitterness, calm turns to anger, And then they start dreading the sacrifice they have to make for the job. And again, to be truthful, for a lot of coaches, it's a volunteer job as well. We go down those spaces. We're human. We're all going to experience that to some level. The goal here, from what you're saying, is to be able to reduce that, to be able to reduce that feeling. And this is possible, isn't it?
It's possible. And you're spot on. This is the validation check we run with the coaches we work with. We all started with this willing to sacrifice for the vision. We're going to show up early and unlock the balls and make sure the lights are on. We were willing to give kids a ride to practice. We were willing to do the extra work to raise money, to have new uniforms, and we're willing to rebound for a guy after practice. We're willing to make all these sacrifices. And over time, that we just start drifting from that. And you can hear it all the time when I talk to coaches. Man, I'm so sick of this. I'm sick of having to do this. And we start dreading the sacrifice that's required. And that's just a first sign of the drift that starts to occur. And then when we first started, we were willing to tackle the problems in front of us. There were challenges that we had to face and overcome to do it. And we approached those with a clear mind, a calm presence. We were going to find innovative solutions. But after a while, we just get frustrated. And all we do is get angry with the problems we got to face. I'm so sick of dealing with that. And then that starts bleeding into our relationships. And the players that we once cared for, the staff that we once cared for, the players' families that we once cared for, we now say, I'm sick of them. Get them out of here. It's time to trade them. Cut them. I can't wait till they graduate. Let's get them off the team. And so we see these drifts from willing to sacrifice to dread, from a calm mind drifting into anger, and then our caring relationships turning to bitterness. And so when we recognize that drift, that's an awareness that, okay, we're starting to lead for own validation. I need to check my own self first. Where are my insecurities showing up? What am I trying to get from my players? What am I trying to get from the competition? What am I trying to get from these results, my status, my role that I don't feel like I have internally? And now I'm stealing from the team rather than giving to the team. And then we got to flip that mindset. Say, I have everything I need. I'm secure in who I am. Now I can show up and give, willingly sacrifice, calm, try to solve the next problem, care for the relationships, even when the performance isn't meeting standards yet.
So I want to give you, first of all, let's go here. So one of the most important things that I learned mainly through Eastern philosophy when I was younger is this concept of being able to change something first has to become consciously aware of it. So this is really what your questions and what your cues here are doing for a coach is to remind them that they're becoming consciously aware of this. That's the first step. The next step, you've outlined some of those things with that. I want to give you a quick case study because I just literally talked to a coach yesterday about this. Amazing coach in our area, doesn't coach my daughters or anything like that, but someone I see all the time. Coaches multiple teams at multiple levels of AU. And he expressed the fact that basically this, that he feels burned out. He used the word burned out more, but it was exactly that. It was like a lack of validation and a lack of appreciation in some ways, which is certainly an authentic feeling. So maybe using him as the avatar, what are some things that actionably he can do to be able to get himself and get his program and get his parents and get his team back online in this championship shift?
So you're right on. The first step there is conscious awareness of it. And that's what we're trying to do with the validation check. That's what we do with our measurement tools is surface, okay, where am I leading for validation and not impact? Or when am I starting to do that? And then the second piece of that, as coaches start to experience this burnout, I'm tired of doing this, is reconnecting to the meaning behind what they're doing. Burnout doesn't happen because you're working too hard. Burnout happens because you've lost meaning in the work you're doing. And so if we can reevaluate, why am I doing what I'm doing? If it's for validation, they'll never win enough games. They'll never have parents compliment them enough to feel validated as a coach. I remember sitting in the locker room as a head coach in the G League, and I've tried everything. I've changed our ball screen coverage, I've changed our lineups, I've changed our rotations, I've changed our offense, and we still lost. And I remember sitting in the locker room, and this is the thought that went right through my head. We're not going to win enough games this year for me to feel validated as a coach. And for me, that was the end of my rope. And it was like, and we still had 34 games to go in the season, right? So I'd reached the end of my rope, but consciously aware of that, okay, I've been doing this for my own validation. If I didn't need to win to feel whole, if I didn't need to win to be validated in the coaching community, how would I approach the situation? And now I step into it with a clear mind to approach the problems with calm, to re-engage with my relationships, that I'm not getting bitter towards the players, but I'm starting to care for them again. And then find new motivation for the sacrifice. Is this worth it? And that's a real question to ask. Like, you might reach a point where, okay, this isn't worth it anymore. I'm not getting validation here. If I don't need validation, what would I do? Would I still coach? Would I still invest in the players and in the program? Or maybe I need to find something else to do where it's a more true overflow of my impact. But that's the starting point. It's the awareness. And then as you're feeling burnout, it's okay, reconnect to the reason. Why are we doing it? Can we make meaning out of what we're doing? And sometimes that meaning just changes over time. I originally started it the program because my kids were in it and I wanted them to have a great experience and help them develop and spend more time with them. Now my kids have graduated from the program. I either need to make new meaning so I can stay re-engaged, or I need to find another outlet and move on.
On board with all this. And yet, I feel for any parents who have kids that are playing sport, and you're especially that all of us that are probably listening are coaches, it's necessary to sometimes provide unsolicited support for a coach, isn't it? Those are the best things, right? We're not asking for it, but when you get that text saying, hey, I really appreciated the extra time you took with my daughter or whatever it may be, those things do help you stay on the path. What are some other things that help you stay on the path? Beyond just, again, some of these internal things that we're working on.
Yeah, that's a great point you said that. I don't need your validation to feel whole. Doesn't mean it still feels good. Like, it doesn't feel good, right? 51% or greater, I'm showing up to impact, not for your validation, but your compliments, your encouragement. No one wishes you were less encouraging with them. And so you can still receive that and appreciate that and use that as fuel. Certainly a valuable energy shot for the work you're doing, no doubt.
So, shifting a little bit then to culture, maybe a little bit, and let's start from a different perspective, maybe. But where is a winning culture most commonly at risk? And then, what are some things a coach can do to diagnose it or to proactively, obviously, stop some of those things that may make it at risk?
Yeah. So we see three main tension points show up. And I love this story. Culture is built through the tension points. So here in Arizona, where I'm based out of, back in the, I think it was the 80s, Southern Arizona, they built a thing called a Biosphere 2. It was this like perfectly enclosed environment where they were trying to simulate the conditions on Earth so they could replicate it in outer space, develop ecosystems and stuff on Mars. And so it was this perfectly like scientifically engineered space, perfect humidity, perfect temperature, perfect precipitation. Like, everything was controlled. Soil nutrients, everything was completely controlled. And what happened in this experiment was fascinating. The trees inside Biosphere 2 grew taller and faster than the trees outside of Biosphere 2. So, like, you can imagine, like, the engineers going home at night being like, holy crap, we did it. We did it better than God. Like, we figured out how to grow life. Amazing accomplishment. But then something really fascinating happened. All the trees started to fall over because the scientists didn't account for a very crucial element, which was wind. There was no wind in Biosphere 2. And what they learned was that wind stress caused the trees to develop stronger root systems and stronger trunks so they could grow to full maturity and withstand. Biosphere 2 had hacked that and found a cheap way to get to growth with missed the infrastructure and the core elements that needed for it to grow to full maturity and withstand it. So the same thing is happening in our culture, and it's showing up in these tension points that we experience. And a lot of leaders and coaches will experience these tension points and feel like I'm doing something wrong, or I messed up, or the culture's broken, they get angry about it. And it's really the opposite. It's okay, here is the moment where we can build our tension, our culture. Here's the moment where we get stronger. Here's the moment where we define who we're going to be, how we're going to operate, and how we're going to connect and relate to each other. So the three big tension points we see in every culture are confusion. There's confusion about where we're headed, the vision, who we're trying to become, what we're trying to accomplish. There's resistance to the systems or structure that's in place, the changes you're trying to make, and there's conflict within the relationships. So these tension points are showing up all the time in cultures, and it's through these tension points that healthy, mature, thriving cultures are built. It's not in the absence of them. And so what we really encourage coaches to do is pay attention to these tension points. How you show up in these moments is going to define the health and strength of your culture.
Great story. Everyone's going to be using that from now on. That's awesome. Great understanding of kind of that. And it is true, like that cultures need to be tested. Cultures need to be rigid versus those tests.
Hey, coach, a brief interruption of our podcast. You know, the best player development is coaching development. So let's work together to get your entire basketball organization or program unparalleled expertise and access to Basketball Immersion's group memberships. It's affordable and your players will thank you. Contact us today, basketballimmersion.com contact page, or DM us on X or Instagram. Get your coaches full access to our extensive coaching video library, detailed courses, and modern evidence-based coaching ideas. You can have proven coach development at your fingertips for all of your coaches. Elevate your coaches, elevate your teams, get started now. Basketball Immersion Group membership is where innovation meets excellence. Contact us today at basketballimmersion.com contact page, or DM us on X or Instagram. Now back to the podcast.
So let's now go to the beginning. We're laying the foundation. High school coach taking over a new program. What are some ideas, actionable ideas for them to be able to start with this championship shift?
Yeah. The first step in building your culture is the vision of where you want to go. And I think this is the missing piece that so many coaches forget about or gloss over. We immediately go into, what are our values? What are our rules? What are our standards? And we lay out this like policy handbook of how we're going to operate. And they miss the capturing the imagination, the captivating vision that gets people engaged and on board with the mission. I saw a coach recently, at a Power Five Division One coach in the States, and he gives a 26-page handbook on their culture to every recruit. And I'm like, what player is reading that? I'm not reading that. And I write books for a living. No one's reading this stuff. It's not the list of rules and standards and values. You first have to start with a vision of where you're headed, who you want to be. And this is best captured in an analogy, in a metaphor, in a picture. Our brains work in pictures and images and stories and metaphors. What's the story? What's the metaphor that captures the vision of who you want to be? This is how you're going to draw people in emotionally. This is how you're going to draw them in intrinsically. What is the vision of where you're headed? That's the starting point of every culture. And then we build the systems and structures to support the vision. I could tell you, you have to show up on time 5 minutes early every single day. This is the rule. Don't break the rule, or here's the punishment. Or I could say, here's the vision of where we're headed. Here's who you could become. And if we all agree that's where we want to go and who we want to become, here's the standards where we have to meet. And now it becomes a self-ownership of the process. And then the structure and the systems in place to accomplish that vision, that gives you the context for healthy relationships.
It's fascinating stuff. And I know you've approached it from a lot of different perspectives, obviously a practical coaching background being number one and arguably most important, because it's not just theoretical, it's experiential as well. And I love that part of this. Make culture your edge. So the subject of your newest book. So a curious thing was, what makes a great culture? Ask 100 coaches and you get 100 different answers. And that's 100% true. in terms of that. So talk to us about that broad spectrum of our understanding of culture and kind of, again, like, I think coaches think they're doing culture and I think coaches think they're talking about culture, but are they actually?
Yeah. And this is where, this is the reason we wrote this book is culture. The topic of culture is just inundated with so many ideas. And to be honest, as a coach, it can be overwhelming. I'm trying to build a culture. I've heard 100 different people say 100 different things that are supposed to be important. And now I'm leading this team and I got to do all of this stuff. I got to define the values. I got to take them out to dinner. I got to check in with them before. I got to have one-to-one meetings. Do I do weekly meetings? Do I do monthly meetings? Do I do quarterly meetings? Do I do individual meetings? Do I do team meetings? It's just so daunting. And I think coaches are going to run to one or two extremes. And a lot I see are just throwing up their hands and say, culture doesn't really matter. Just get good people and it'll figure itself out. And it, to me, this is the biggest fallacy in leadership is, you know, just get good, talented people and get out of their way. Well, good, talented people still need to be led. They still need a vision to get aligned around. They still need structures and systems to figure out how to operate together. And they still need to get connected in a unity, not a uniformity, but a unity with the group. So you still have to lead through it. But nowadays, culture is so daunting. And the mistake that happens is most of us define culture out of our own temperament, out of our own personalities. And as we said earlier, if you're not aware of the insecurities that really drive what you value, you're going to start to over or undervalue different parts of a culture. And that's why we get 100 different answers, because all of us are coming in with different perspectives, different past experiences. We saw it work for them, so it must work here. We saw it work for them. This worked for me before, so it must work again now. And we're building culture around either our own values, our own temperament, or we're stealing from someone else's temperament and trying to make that a culture. So what we've tried to do in the book is simplify culture and make it a template, not a temperament. And if you follow the template, you can define exactly what your culture is. You can also diagnose what your culture needs at any moment. If you're sitting around and you're sitting, I've sat in so many meetings where the coach is asking the staff, like, is our culture bad? How do you answer that question? One guy's going to say it is bad because no one shows up on time, because he values that aspect of it. Another one's going to say it is bad because we don't have any fun, because he overvalues joy in a culture. Another one's going to say it is bad because we don't ever go out to eat. He values connection in a culture. So how do you define? How do you know if it's good or bad? The book lays out a simple template, a simple model that we talked about to be able to define, is your culture good, bad? And what does your culture need at this moment?
I would also guess that saying your culture is bad is an easy answer, right? It's like such a generality that as an assistant or as another coach or as a head coach, I can just say that because then it is all encompassing and our culture is bad. And that's the catch-all excuse, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's like our culture sucks. So what are we going to do? Let's fire the coaches. Let's change all the players. That's not going to change a culture if you don't have a clear vision of where you're headed. If you haven't defined the systems and structures that are going to help you get there, and if you aren't connected relationally, well, no matter what you do next, your culture is going to be bad. Okay, bring in someone else who is a rule enforcer. Okay, you're going to lose another part of a culture. Okay, bring in, we'll fire him and we'll bring in someone else who's more relational and is a little more laid back. Then the culture is going to tilt the other way. Until that doesn't work, then we fire him and bring in someone else. Now, it's the pendulum is just constantly going to swing because we're focused on temperament more than a template model to make culture really valuable.
I know you're well-versed in some of the things I talk about, and you just referenced it without saying it, but survivorship bias, right? Mm-hmm. The survivorship bias exists in skill acquisition, motor learning, or practice design, all these different things. And obviously I've spent a long time trying to navigate that space and help people understand it. What are some things maybe in the culture space that are the survivorship bias or these things that now are debunked a little bit that maybe we thought were always like this must or this cliche and stuff? And the reality is not that.
Yeah. Yeah. We see it every year. Whoever won the championship last year is going to define everyone's culture for the next year, right? We follow, like you said, survivorship bias. Whoever did it best last is going to set the model. The two biggest mistakes I see the coaches I work with fall into, the biggest traps they fall into, is the obsessiveness over preparation and details. Now, don't hear me wrong here. I'm not saying details are not important. I'm not saying preparation is not important. But what I've seen people fall into, and our measurement has backed this up with every coach we've worked with, is this over-reliance on I can out-prepare or out-detail all of my insecurities. I heard a coach recently just give this diatribe on his scouting process and how many games he watched and the amount of time he put into it. And he was like, the hardest ones are the simple scouts because you feel like you missed something. And then you're staying up till 3 a.m. and you're watching games over and over, and you're watching the 20th game. And I don't know, I guess it makes you feel good inside. And that's what we're doing. If I over prepare, I'll make myself feel good inside. And then we wonder why we're burnt out, or we wonder why we've lost our motivation for it. We wonder why our health is starting to suffer. We wonder why we're stressed out and blowing up on the team in the locker room. We wonder why our family's feeling the stress of the role. Like, we can blame it on name, image, and likeness and transfer portal. And we can say, oh, this is what we signed up for. Or we can be honest about the insecurities that are driving our behaviors and say, okay, I can put a better system in place to be prepared and also be prepared to adjust on the fly. The second mistake I see is this rigidity for standards. Now, again, don't hear me wrong. I'm not saying standards aren't important. We want to have standards and we need to hold people to a high standard. And this is where I see college basketball shifting a ton. But the basketball landscape in general is it used to be come to this program, do it my way or leave. It's my way or the highway. I know the best way. I know how it is. It's come to this program and we're going to make you like us, right? But here's the key truth in all of this. Your players are not a blank canvas to be written on. They're a painting to be studied. And so the approach where it's my way or the highway, I know what's right, I know what's wrong, and you're going to live up to my standard, rather than a cooperation of understanding who this player is, their background, their experiences. Is there a third way? Is there an innovative approach I can take to draw the best out of this person so he or she can be at their best and he or she can amplify our culture and make our team better? And so those two ditches are the big ones that I see with the coaches that we work with, and our measurement tools have backed that up pretty consistently.
A few things stand out there from what you said. I mean, is obviously the coach trying to control everything. Definitely in my space, when I consult with coaches all the time, that's one of the first things I say is to try and get them to understand that actually letting go of control will create a better environment for them and their players. And then, particularly when you were talking about this culture piece, what reflects back to me is the fact that when they give up control, a lot of culture can evolve naturally. And to a certain extent, it's better if it occurs that way, that you can't predetermine what my players need to learn. And I can't predetermine what culture is going to be sometimes until we're in that space and we're immersed in it together, practicing, performing, getting better.
Yeah, 100%. And as a coach, we're going to show up and the culture's going to happen because of my force of will and my force of personality, right? My temperament's going to set the tone for the culture rather than getting the group together and letting the culture form within the group and the unique personalities and approaches. And this doesn't mean you can't define guardrails and set a direction, but it is definitely allowing it to be a living organism and letting it evolve and grow. And to your work, and I know you'll be on board with this, the analogy I use with coaches a lot is when you feel like they're trying to over control or control every variable in what's going on, is paying attention to the difference between bike wrecks and car wrecks and what needs your attention more. So if you're teaching your kid to ride a bike, they fall over, scrape their knee, come up, oh, dad, my knee, I scraped my knee. Oh, you got a boo, put a band-aid on it, get back on the bike and let him ride. But we know having bike wrecks is part of the process of learning to ride a bike. The wrong approach, kid falls over, scrapes his knee, dad, dad, I scraped my knee, I fell off my bike. Okay, put him on the bike. I'm going to grab the handlebars. I'll walk with you so you never fall ever again. They're never going to learn to ride the bike, right? Compare that to car wrecks. Your child gets in a car wreck. They call, "Dad, Dad, I got in a car accident." Okay, this is like 911 alert, right? Serious injury, probably, potentially, life or death situation. I need to intervene, call the cops, police report, insurance. This is an important deal. This requires a different level of engagement, attention, and energy than a bike wreck does. There's a million, an infinite number of bike wrecks your team needs to go through and learn to grow and develop. There's only three car wrecks you got to pay attention to and worry about. Are we off vision? Are we broken system or structure, or is there damage in relationships? If someone is off vision, that requires full attention engagement. We need to get back on track. We need to get back on the same page, right? You've broken a system that's in place so we can get to that vision. Well, we need to intervene, either reinforce the system or we need to improve the system to upgrade with our team, or we've violated relationship, trust, and health. That requires our full intervention. Everything else is a bike wreck, and your team is going to have to go through bike wrecks to learn and grow and become the players and team that they're going to reach their full potential.
Another great analogy. And another thing that I read from you that I love this phrasing is, because I do think this is so applicable, is engagement isn't linear. And we think about this as coaches all the time. Oh, they always need to be intense. They always need to be focused. They always need to be engaged. They always, and it's not this linear process. And accepting that and understanding that is a real value. So I imagine that's where you're going, but explain that a little bit to the coaches that are listening.
Yeah, 100%. It's the same as a relationship. If you're married, like your engagement in your marriage, it starts as one thing when you first get married, and then there's a honeymoon period and it wanes and you have to re-engage, and like your relationship's going to evolve over time. But just to think we're just going to get more and more engaged as time goes on is unrealistic. And I see coaches get frustrated with this a lot, especially in that January, February, you get in the middle of the season grind of it, and teams get bored or they lose interest or they lose focus. This engagement wanes a little bit, and coaches get angry about that and like rush in there and come with more intensity and try to pull more out of them. But it's more of an awareness of like understanding, okay, whatever the vision or metaphor we've been using to inspire our motivation to this point isn't working anymore, and we need to re-engage. Okay, we need to relate to the vision. Maybe the systems and structures in place are no longer serving us, and we need to reevaluate the structures. This goes back to the original thing we talked about with like my way or the highway. No, this is the rule. You do the rule, or else you're off the team. Okay, the rule serves us. It's not the other way around. The rule is in place so we can accomplish the vision. But do we need to upgrade the structure? Do we need to upgrade the systems? So it's constantly tweaking the knobs, right? We're sound mixing live as the season goes along. And now we need to turn down the bass and make some adjustments as we go. But yeah, to assume that engagement, they're engaged once and they're always going to be engaged, is not going to happen. And this is really true now in the current college basketball landscape with the transfer portal and how that stuff happens. At the end of each season, coaches are angry because they got to re-recruit their players. Yeah, you got to re-recruit your players all the time. You have to re-establish engagement. You have to reignite the vision. You have to reconnect them to why you're doing what you're doing. And that's the process of leadership. It's not new to the transfer portal. It's magnified because the results of not doing that are there's real consequences to it. But that's just the nature of leadership. You always have to communicate the vision, upgrade your systems and structures, and make sure those relationships remain fresh and connected.
And in fact, I feel that one of the things I've improved at the most in the last 10 years is my ability to continuously and proactively sell the vision, whatever that may be. If it's I'm running a clinic or I'm running practices or whatever it is, constantly to remind kids, hey, we're playing basketball to get better at basketball. Hey, what are we doing in practice today? We're playing basketball. and like selling them on in advance that that's the culture of this, is that we're enjoying this because we're playing basketball, for example. And that is one of those things that is a constant process for coaches nowadays. And as you said, this isn't new. It's just maybe heightened more, but it's not new in terms of those things. And I love that approach to those things.
If I can interject, you understand this better than anyone based on the work you're doing. But the mistake we make as coaches is, hey, we told you the vision once, and then, oh, they got it, and we're moving on. This is the biggest mistake. As a coach, you didn't just wake up this morning, have the vision, this is what I want to do, and move on and go for it. The vision's been cooking in your mind for a while. Like, you've thought about it. You've wrestled with it. You've tested it. You've asked other people's opinions about it. You've convinced yourself it's the way to go, and now we're going to go for it. But then we tell the players once, here's the vision. Here's where we're headed. And then expect the engagement to just happen forever. Like, you have to constantly. The problem is, as soon as your players walk out of practice, what are they doing? They're right on the phone. They're scrolling social media. They're getting inundated with a million other messages. They're comparing notes with their friends. They're talking to an agent. Like, your vision is gone the moment they left the locker room. Next day, you've got to reignite the vision. You've got to say it again. Why are we here? To get better at basketball, right? You have to constantly restate your vision over and over and over. And until you feel like you're vomiting it, like you're sick of saying it, they've just now started to hear it. And here's the trick. When they joke about it, you finally got them. Don't get offended. Coach, we're basketball is fun. Once they start joking about it, pat yourself on the back. Say, hey, I got it. We finally reached it. We finally got it embedded in their minds. But until you've done that, you haven't said it enough.
That, I mean, of many great things you said, that may be the most practical for someone to take away from here is that. I love that. That's so true in everything that we do as coaches, or for you and I as online entrepreneurs as well in this space. So not every coach had a great year. So there's a lot of coaches that are very good coaches that didn't have a great year, and they're dealing with that process right now. What is some advice to them?
Yeah. The first piece, the easiest advice is come talk to us. We have a script to lead your staff through an exit interview, basically an evaluation of what happened this season and where you go from here. The first step is be honest about reality. Okay, face the pain of the moment. Don't rush past it with this false optimism or whatever. Let's be honest about where we're at and paying attention to the metaphors you're using to describe the season. Because our brain thinks in stories and metaphors. This is how we organize our behavior, how our mindset directs our behavior and our actions. So what's the metaphor that's driving you right now? It feels like we're spinning our wheels, where we're stuck in mud, we're whatever it might be. And then how could you flip that metaphor to the positive? I feel like I'm having to push the car myself. I want to develop a car with a high-powered engine that can run at full speed. Okay, that's the shifting. That's the guiding metaphor. Okay, here's the vision of where we want to head. That's the vision. And then, okay, what are the systems and structures that need to be in place to get there? Just acknowledge, what's our biggest problem? What's the root cause of what's going on right now? And if you notice that problem, and then challenge yourself, this is where every coach gets stuck from the ones that I work with. You think there's a binary, a black and white, a right and wrong, one way, my way or the highway. Challenge yourself. What's the innovative solution? What's the innovative approach? Where do we need to expand our mindset and come up with a new idea to tackle this problem? Or are we just going to keep beating our head into the wall and complain that the players aren't the same as they were before? Let's find a better approach. And then that innovation is going to require some risks. So what are the bike wrecks you're going to have to live with and experience so you can become the kind of team that you want to become? And then from there, that's setting up the relationships. You're probably doing this with a staff, or maybe you get your players involved in this conversation. So what's the vulnerability? What are the relationships need? How are people feeling about this approach and this process? So we can support each other emotionally in that process, because what you're doing is hard. It's hard, and it's going to require sacrifice. It's going to require you to tackle some big challenges in new ways. And it's going to require you to be vulnerable in your relationships to get there, because you're not going to be able to do it on your own.
Love that. Giving someone obviously some hope and a process for that hope is such a big part of what you do, I'm sure. And obviously the action steps and everything with it, we'll talk about here. One last thing I wanted to hit on is this mission of yours, which I love that you articulated, this mission of trying to free coaches from false hustle. What a beautiful phrasing and what a beautiful ambition as well. Because I think that was one of the, again, I think all coaches go through this, but that was one of the most liberating things for me is understanding what's valuable versus what's not.
100%. And this is how many coaches show up and all this, the activity they're doing, the work they're putting in. And like I said, that coach mentioned before, it makes us feel good inside. It makes you feel good about what you're doing. It makes you be able to tell people, oh, this is what I signed up for. This is how much effort I'm putting in. This is the work I'm putting in. And all we're really doing is comforting our insecurities. That's really all we're doing. We're going to tell ourselves, oh, I'm turning over every stone. I'm making myself feel good. I'm leading for my own validation. That's all we're doing. Again, not saying hard work's not important. Not saying attention to detail is not important. I'm not saying preparation's not important. All that is. But let's evaluate why we're doing what we're doing. And if you show up and you realize, you know what? I'm watching this game for the fourth time to make myself feel good about it. Coach, I was there. I was leading the Northern Arizona Suns in the G League. And we were not good. In fact, we were on pace to be the worst team in the history of the G League. And I spent every night after a game staying up till 2 o'clock in the morning, rewatching UFC fights. I was comforting the pain of this. If I'm going to get my head beat in, I want to watch someone else get their head beat in too. I'm comforting the pain that I'm going through because we weren't going to win enough games for me to feel validated as a coach. And if I'm honest with myself, that was the driving motivation. And so to free ourselves from that, you can have an impact on people's lives. It may feel harder than ever, right? But I would argue it just needs a new approach. How we were coached, how our parents coach, how our grandparents coach, it's not going to work now. But you can still have a life-changing impact in this profession if you're showing up to impact, not for your own validation.
100% on board with that. And your work is a big part of that. Let coaches know where they can find you and reach out for more information.
Yeah, they can find us at Championshift. That's S-H-I-F-T, championshift.com. We're going to help you find a better way to lead, better way to compete. You can't have an impact. Win big without sacrificing everything that you care most about.
Awesome stuff, Brett. Thanks for sharing the game with us and best of luck on your journey to help coaches with false hustle.
Thanks for having me.